and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We also make vows on this podcast. We never break them once we make them. And as we talk about the NBA here on Sunday afternoon, we swore we were done talking about the Lakers or the Warriors until they were out of the 9-10, which I think we thought was going to be when they were out of the playoffs at the end of the season. Well, I don't know if the Lakers will be out of the 9 seed by the time this podcast posts and this show goes on air, but joining us from Los Angeles is the man who covers the current number 8 seed in the Western Conference, moving out of, well, they've been in 10th at some point, I think, but moving into the top 8 for the first time since December is Dave McMenamin. David, welcome.
I am so honored to join you both on this championship Sunday for the women's NCAA bracket. But we have some, I don't know, maybe important business to talk about, because I don't think this is like a plucky Lakers story making up for some lost ground. And it looks better in the end. Sometimes a blowout, right? The other team makes a comeback and then it looks better than it actually was in terms of a game. I think this is a real indicator of what the Lakers are going to be capable of in the next couple of months.
Joining us from the American Airlines Center, where he's about to cover the Rockets against the Mavericks on Sunday afternoon. Hey, McMenamin, he is actually in the hockey press box. He's been banned from the lower portions of the arena. It's Ben McMahon in the hockey press box.
Howdy, partners. This won't surprise you. I actually was banned by Dallas Morning News editors of covering hockey. Back in my Dallas Morning News blog days, there was an editor who did not take kindly to me during a live blog inquiring about whether they wore skates during the halftime show. And telling folks I thought the Stars were going to make a fourth quarter comeback when they were getting their butts kicked in a playoff game. So I haven't been up here in a while, but I just feel right at home, just like the Lakers in that play-in picture. Just feels comfortable, man. Hey, but no more Mac 10 seed. He has been promoted to Mac 8 seed, baby.
By the way, real quick, before we talk about the Lakers, Dave, I don't know if you've ever talked about this on the pod. Over your left shoulder is a very interesting collection that our ESPN2 viewers and YouTube viewers can see. Will you tell us what that is? Because I don't think I've ever known anybody who has a collection like this.
Yeah, so it's every patch that the team has worn in the NBA Finals from 96 through, I think, 2021. So, it through the years, you had the little guy, in the Jordan era, and then you move on to, Shaq and Kobe and Iverson. And this was, I think it changed around 2008, then you go through the Celtics years with the Lakers, with the KG, et cetera. And then you're moving on to the Heat era. And now we end the Warriors and.
Yeah. They got rid of the script finals, which it's in stark contrast there. You can see how much more beautiful the script.
Yeah.
Finals.
Yeah. I really love the script finals there. As long as it doesn't say YouTube TV on it, because I think that's where
excuse
we're
me,
going
sir. To it. Excuse me, that's a partner of ours.
We love
How
YouTube.
Did you acquire all of those patches? Was it hard to get those patches?
Yeah, I mean, there's the company that makes it for the NBA will generally release them. So I bought some of them. But then the older ones, though, the little eBay digging. I don't know. I mean, I guess this proves I have too much free time in the offseason, but I like the way it came out.
I think that's it's nicely framed, McMahon. He could probably get a nice, there's probably some, retail value. It's a good item, as they say.
There you go.
Meanwhile, you're in an interrogation room in a casino where they break people's hands for card counting. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. Casino moguls did just buy the Mavericks, so you never know.
Yeah, Jackson doesn't want to talk about that. He wants to talk about the Syracuse National Championship. I mean, that's all well and good, but,
21-year anniversary of it today. Let's go.
I was there. It was in New Orleans, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah.
Jackson was in his short pants. All right. The Lakers have won 9 out of 10 games. Now, they're good. They are playing Sunday night against the Timberwolves, the second night of a back-to-back. And it's bad news because they actually have to play a Western Conference opponent. Now, the Lakers are playing well, and we're going to talk about this. But they've won 9 out of 10. It took 9 out of 10 to get them out of ninth. Moved past Sacramento. We'll see if they stay there. But 8 of the 9 wins have been against Eastern Conference teams. You just made long Eastern Conference trip. They slapped around the Cavs on Saturday. They're definitely playing well, which we'll discuss in a second here. But they've also taken advantage of the schedule, which has them with, you know, with the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, where at Crypto, they got moved out, moved east. And the East is just in shambles right now. And the Lakers are taking advantage of that and pounding those teams.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the signature win in that stretch is a comeback against Milwaukee. They're down 19 points without 8 minutes to go and storm back and win in double overtime. And at the time, I mean, anytime you do something like that, a scripted win like that, that's stirring and that gets you going. But we thought it was then beating a formidable Milwaukee Bucks team. And that was kind of, you know, a fissure in the armor of what we've seen the Bucks to be over the last couple of weeks. It might say more about the Bucks than it does about the Lakers there. But you know, one, they got their offense together around mid-January, sure. And they've been a top five offensive team since. And defensively, they're serviceable. And there were times when it was like, okay, we're just going to outscore teams 135 to 130. And you know, I guess in some level, you got to do that to get through the regular season, especially when you're trying to make up ground. But you're starting to see them, you know, have sub 25 point quarters. That's what is the metric that they all like to use in that locker room. You know, Darvin Ham wrote on the whiteboard after the win over the Cavs, the quarter totals for the Cavs, and three out of the four were sub 25 points. That's, you know, that makes them ecstatic as a team. And some of that, again, comes back to the offense, where they are mostly limiting their turnovers. And when they had that major dip after the in-season tournament, they were top three, top four teams in terms of live ball turnovers and defensive possessions. They had to defend off of that. And it became a point of contention. That's one of the things between, you know, when Darvin Ham was kind of feeling it from his players, and they're telling Darvin, hey, we want to run different stuff. And he's saying, well, we're not running anything because you're turning the ball over and the other team's shoving it down our throat on the other end. I think just cleaning up that area has made them a better defensive team. And then Anthony Davis, he's not going to win Defensive Player of the Year, but he is still in the half court about as, I don't know, a catch-all of a defender as you're going to get in today's NBA.
He's having a great year, just bottom line. He's having just a spectacular season. Definite second team All-NBA. We'll probably get some first team All-NBA votes, especially if he's able to keep him in the top eight here. So McMahon, let me go over some of the Stats Williams stuff. He's going through since February 1st, which is as good of a time as any. Dave mentioned the offense getting together in January. I think it kind of coincides with when D'Angelo Russell went back in the starting lineup, which, surprise to me, has been terrific. Since February 1st, and this is, again, heading into the game against the Timberwolves. I mean, if the Lakers lose that game, it's not going to be the end of the world. The Lakers are 21-8. That's the second best record in the league since February 1st, behind just the Celtics. So that means that they've got the best record as of right now in the West since February 1st, which is 5-6 weeks here. That's not insignificant. And as Dave mentioned, it has generally been built around the offense, which this team, we know, has struggled to shoot the ball. And early in this season, just like last year, was having trouble in three-point range. No more. Number one in the league in that stretch in overall field goal percentage shooting. That's awesome. LeBron recently has been on a Miami Heat-like efficiency kick where his attempts are down and percentage way up, and that's certainly been a part of that. Second in points per game, second in three-point percentage, which is huge for them. And again, is sort of related to Russell and Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves is shooting the three ball well, really well, especially since the All-Star break. And, you know, I went and looked, Dave, because a few weeks ago, I was really exacerbated with the Laker defense. They were 25th or 26th over like a month and a half stretch. And I was like, they're never going to get up out of the play-in with defense like that. And you are right, though. Over the last 15 games, which again, you can draw the box in different ways that you want to draw it. But over the last 15 games, they're 13th in defense. And a lot of that is good half-court defense with AD, a lot of good lineups with AD in there. And look, 13th is probably not going to win you the title, but it's going to give you, if you're going to play offense this way and you're going to play at least middle-of-the-pack defense, it's going to give you a chance. And McMahon, the Lakers, I guess they have a chance now.
Back them as obviously a team that has two superstars with rings. LeBron has obviously four rings and, you know, made a run last year to the Western Conference Finals, most competitive sweep that we've ever seen. Got that bronze ball flying. But look, like you said, this is a significant sample size, 21-8, and they are tied for the best record in the Western that time. The Mavericks, another massive surprise, also gone 21-8 in that span. And then So have the Denver Nuggets, who continue to be the favorites in the Western Conference. One of the big surprises to me is during that stretch, the Lakers have they've played at the fastest pace in the Western Conference, which, you know, you think about a team that plays big, that has, you know, the face of the franchise is 39 years old, and they're playing at the fastest pace in the Western Conference. Only the Wizards and the Pacers have played at a faster pace in the league. And that, to me, is pretty remarkable.
What comes down, you know, Darvin Ham likes to call it running habits, and he recognizes that, one, LeBron, among the many skills that he has, I think the undisputed legacy or part of his game is that he's the best player with a head of steam in NBA history. Because he's going to get into the paint and finish himself, or obviously he has the court vision to spray it out. And a wide open three in rhythm, as you get into a spot, in the corner, that's a lot easier shot than top of the key, top of the break, off the dribble, step back, et cetera. And I think that's also part of the reason Brian's citing that three-point statistic for the Lakers. It goes up with the ease of the looks. And again, I don't think this is the formula for when they turn the page to April 17th and it's a play-in tournament game, or turn the page to the first round of the playoffs. But it has been the formula to make up the ground that they lost from the in-season tournament win through mid-January.
Well, I will say this about LeBron. He's shooting his best three-point. He's having his best three-point season of his career, a little over 41%. And the last time he was over 40% was many years ago, 10 years ago with the Heat. And
you see that Brooklyn game?
The game he played against Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Yes, I saw it.
I'm not watching the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, where he went 9-10.
I saw highlights.
9-10. It was wild. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's what he did back in those Heat days, where he had some stretch where there was 8 or 10 games he shot 70%, and he absolutely would not take a shot that he wasn't 85% sure was going in. And it kind of at some, you know how LeBron starts to trail stats, Dave. You would argue if you're 9-10, you would never have a game where you were 9-10, because if you were 9-10, number 11 was going. And if you're 11, 12, 13. But he only shot 32% from three-point range last year, which was his worst in about 6 or 7 years. And, he was dealing with the foot injury, et cetera. And I think that all played a factor. But there's a couple other things from Stats Williams underscoring LeBron's efficiency this year. So in the game against the Cavs, which our little Cavs corner, Jackson, start the clock.
As Bontem says, sponsored by nobody.
The Cavs defense has collapsed post All-Star break, and a lot of it's collapsed in transition. They are horrible in transition defense. The Lakers ate them alive on Saturday afternoon in transition, with LeBron leading a lot of it. They, I think, are now 24th in defense their last 25 games, which they are 10 and 15 in. But that has been Cavs corner. LeBron had 24 and 12 on against the Cavs on Saturday. He has 15 points and 5 assists, which are low numbers, but the 5 assists are the more, in 32 straight games, which is the longest streak for his career. Huh. I'm sorry, ties his longest streak of his career. And he has 45 20.5 rebound, 5 assist games this season, which is the second most in Lakers history. So he's having... he's having a very good year and putting up big numbers. And while AD's performance, I think AD has 9 straight 20-10 games. Now that I've said all of this, Jackson, the Lakers are going to get blown off the floor tonight against the Wolves. But obviously LeBron is playing well. Obviously he's shooting well. He's distributing the ball well. He's moving well. So the Lakers are scoring in transition, hitting their threes. All of those things are coming together. Dave, LeBron made some passive aggressive comments, and the Lakers took some heat for standing pat at the deadline. I don't know if standing pat at the deadline was the result of Rob Pelinka saying, "I believe in this team," and pounding on the table, or it was they literally, because I think on deadline day, he said something like, "You have to have somebody to trade with." Huh. But the Lakers have kind of been vindicated. They haven't won the title, but they've kind of been vindicated in sticking with this group and believing in it coming around.
Yeah, I think it was a colorful phrase, something like, you can't just buy someone's house if it's not for sale. Mm-hmm. And listen, if you told anyone before the season you can get Spencer Dinwiddie for a song, that's a great pickup. And in some sense, and I don't want to rely too, or I wouldn't want to talk about the Lakers relying on him too much, but you've Gabe Vincent back now too. So, you know, you've added to one for sure rotation player in Dinwiddie right now, and another guy who, you know, if he continues to work on his conditioning, and, you know, there's no practice time in the NBA, we know that, but he can help you out in a pinch. Certainly that was something that's worked out in their favor while maintaining the draft assets, potentially having up the three first round draft picks this summer to go star hunting once again. And, you know, again, LeBron has a decision to make with an extension. There's many things at play. I believe he'll be with the Lakers next year.
So do I.
And you can try to add another major talent to play alongside him and Anthony Davis and make, you know, at some point we have to say one last run at a championship. And I think, you know, whatever that trade occurs, if they are able to pull it off, it will be the one last run. There'll be no more assets left in the LeBron era. So whenever that trade occurs, if Rob Pelinka can pull it off, that is the one last try to win a championship with LeBron James with the Lakers. And it could very well happen this summer. And Rob Pelinka wouldn't have been able to play that card had he nickel and dimed at the trade deadline and found, you know, maybe a marginal piece that would have helped them. Here's an interesting stat that I heard when we were on the road trip. We were in Toronto. You know, the Lakers' big free agent target until the Indiana Pacers blew up that plan was Bruce Brown. And you know, they thought he would be the guy with, you know, switchable defense and certainly
trade deadline
off.
Trade deadline target. Free agency.
It started with free agency. Okay. Yeah. And then they also discussed it at the trade deadline.
Okay.
I should say. Well, Bruce Brown, up until the day the Lakers played the Raptors this season, zero charges drawn on the year. And yeah, I think the Lakers analytics team were happy to pass that around the locker room. And also probably the front office probably didn't mind hearing it too much. Cause like, oh, I guess maybe we didn't strike out on that guy that we thought was going to be our fix everything for our defense.
I would say the Nuggets were pretty happy with him last year when they were winning a championship, but I think Bruce Brown's ability to contribute to a championship team has been proven without any doubt, but I hear what you're saying. Yeah. I think one of the fascinating things about this Lakers team is the guy who is being dangled in all those trade talks has been a huge part of saving their season. I'm talking about obviously D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, I want to talk about him, and I talk about the Lakers summer in a second.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Welcome back to the Hoop Collective. Okay, McMahon, you had just brought up D'Angelo Russell. So Russell been terrific this year, much better than we thought, and certainly much better than the Lakers maybe even thought when they were dangling him at the trade deadline. He's got an interesting situation that's going to come up this summer. And I do want to talk about who the Lakers might face off in the playoffs here in a minute, Dave. But Russell has an option in his contract. And if he opts out, he's an unrestricted free agent. There are some teams that need guard help this summer who have cap space. The Lakers also would be hard-pressed to replace him. But the Lakers also have been interested in trading him. So in addition to this summer, where I think LeBron's going to opt out no matter what, Dave. And the reason I think he's going to opt out no matter what is even if he just signs back for 1 year, the only functional way for LeBron to get a no trade clause is to sign a new contract. If he extends the contract he's in or picks up that option and extends onto it, he can't get a no trade clause. And I think for a number of different reasons, LeBron would like ask for and probably be granted a no trade clause. So there may be some debate with him and the Lakers about whether he should get 3 years, whether a third year would be a team option or a player option or not guaranteed or whatever. I think there could be some interesting negotiations back and forth on that. I think we're headed for an interesting choice for Russell, both A, whether to opt in or not. My guess is he opts out, and B, whether the Lakers, who do have his rights and could sign and trade him, how the Lakers will approach that. I think in a summer where there's probably not going to be a lot of free agency interest, maybe from Paul George, if he becomes an unrestricted free agent, Russell is one of them. And I know, McMahon, you felt that he's played a pretty important role for them.
I mean, he's been huge. And you know, Dave wrote about him. Just this guy has consistently been an efficient 19 plus point per game scorer in their starting lineup. And look, I'm on record saying I think they screwed up and they should have not looped the Wolves into the deal and taken Conley. Obviously, I thought that they should have gone after Kyrie this summer, but the Lakers would be in deep trouble if D'Angelo Russell hadn't played as well as he has on a consistent basis all season long. So you've got to give the guy credit, and he has outperformed his contract. There's no question about that.
AD was talking about it after the Cavs win, that they're a group right now where, you know, whatever the so-called vibes are going well. And part of that is like, hey, he listed off the things that the different guys do. And he says, you know, D'Angelo's going to take his crazy threes and he's going to make a lot of them. And there was a level of acceptance where I think the guys in that locker room, rather than shoot him sideways glances after he's taking a shot that's not part of, you know, what you script up as the most ideal efficient shot, recognize that that's kind of the way he finds his flow and gets in the game and stays engaged. If he feels he has the freedom to take those type of shots, you're going to get more from him on the other end. You're going to get more engagement from him in the huddles, talking about the different plays that they can run, et cetera, et cetera. And with that, you found D'Angelo Russell, who, you know, I wasn't here. I was in LA when he had his first stint with the team, but I know several people in the organization and other reporters who have seen that arc for the guy. And you can just see that he's someone who's lived a very strange existence and has found a way, a path to maturity through it. And he's more reliable now than he was even a year ago, even 6 months ago. He's more reliable. And listen, there will be a pressure or a desire from the Lakers front office to go, quote unquote, big game hunting this summer and see if they can get someone like a Donovan Mitchell with the trade. And you may need D'Angelo Russell's contract to get that done. But there are certainly worse things that could happen than extending this guy and having him be a part of what they have going, particularly because it's not just his skill set, but he has a true bond with Austin Reeves. And like when you talk about this team kind of taking on a new identity post LeBron James, those two guys could be a very big part of that.
And that's why, to me, I don't understand why D'Angelo Russell would consider picking up that option, right? Like, why be on a one-year deal when you've had a great year, outplayed that contract? You know, if you're on that one-year deal, you're extremely easy to trade, whether it's Donovan Mitchell, you know, Trae Young, like whatever names you want to throw, Superstar X or Star X, if you don't want to call those guys superstars. If you're going to get traded, at least get traded with multiple guaranteed years at a higher salary.
That's true. I think almost certainly he will not pick up the option. You work your whole life to be coming off a great season and being unrestricted. And since the All-Star break, he's shooting 43% on threes. He's playing almost 36 minutes a game. So they obviously are using him a lot. He's averaging 21 a game since the All-Star break. So obviously pretty big. Dave, the Lakers have had some success against some of the teams in front of them in the standings. We'll see about what happens with Minnesota. I believe is this the first time Minnesota's played in LA this year or not? Maybe, I know they played them twice in a row in Minnesota earlier on.
Yeah, including the LeBron sneaker gate that I still maintain it did not step on the line because the sneaker curves up at the front. So if this is the line,
yeah,
the tip of the sneaker is not touching the line.
That was like, yeah, that was
the
like
the sneaker curves up.
Listen, this is the guy who once famously on this podcast gave a glowing review of Kyle Kuzma because, quote, he has a gooseneck. On his jump shot.
Yeah.
Which is an iconic moment in the history of the podcast. It was All-Star weekend in Charlotte. We were all in the same room and we had to stop the pod. He pays attention to the curvature of things.
Let's just keep it moving.
Anyway, they won 3 out of 4 against the Thunder this year. Mm-hmm. The Thunder, I guess, have rebounded the ball a little bit better after the All-Star break. It's still not great. Dave, you were at those games. If the Lakers can get into the 7-8 game, which would mean they'd have to split, they have to get one win in the play-in, and the second game would be at home, even against the Warriors or the Kings, who've had a lot of success against them, I would probably lean towards them getting that team having to play the second road game in a week. Who should the Laker fans be trying to get their hands on in a possible first round series?
It's OKC, and yes, it's not necessarily a knock on them. But if the other options are the Denver Nuggets, and we do not want to face the Denver Nuggets, right? And the Wolves, you know, you just have the supernova potential of Anthony Edwards. You have the fact that the Wolves have had more success against the Lakers this year, and you know, the kind of, we don't know on Cat and what exactly happens there, but you know, potentially they have a ton of size that makes it tougher on the Lakers, as well as Jackson Hayes has played over the last couple months. You know, I don't know if you want to be relying on him to play a huge role in a playoff game. So, you know, OKC it is. And that said, LeBron James has gone out of his way. Any chance he gets, whether it be complimenting Sam Presti, whether it be complimenting Mark Daigneault or Jalen Williams, you know, so there's certainly a level of respect there for what they have going. But a couple things. One, you know, I've talked to scouts around the league, and listen, the numbers show that the Lakers get a favorable whistle. I don't think that's necessarily going to change. We also know anecdotally, young players who receive a favorable whistle in the regular season don't necessarily receive that in the postseason. And so I think the Lakers still get the calls that they get, and SGA may not. And there's another factor that could work in the Lakers' favor. And certainly, I mean, fear factor or whatever, like that doesn't exist. Like the Lakers, when they were kind of reeling in late December, one of the only like professional, really good performances they had was going to OKC. They had a shoot around, they put in a game plan, they executed that night and kind of controlled the action from start to finish. And then LeBron James had a wonderful flourish in the fourth quarter to close out the game. Like, and they all remember that. Like they know, okay, even when we were at our worst in like a tailspin, we got it together to beat the OKC Thunder. So yeah, that's the team that you pick. I mean, it's pick your poison, because you wish you're not in the eighth or seventh seed and looking up at the team with the home court advantage, but that's where they're going to be.
Well, there's two things you look at with the Thunder that you call, whether you want to call them concerns, question marks, whatever. They are small and they are inexperienced. Well, the Lakers are big and extremely experienced. I mean, you look at, especially when LeBron's playing the three, I mean, they're massive. And then you look at playoff experience, LeBron by himself has 282 games of playoff experience. The entire Thunder roster has combined for 108. And the vast majority of that are two bigs who sit on the end of the bench and wave towels, Mike Muscala and Bismack Biyombo.
That's right.
I mean, it's now you can argue about how much does playoff experience really matter, but like you could not find a more drastic difference in terms of just being, having been in those situations. So, I mean, to me, it's the Lakers would want to see the Thunder out of the realistic options, and it's not a difficult decision. That doesn't mean they'll win the series. It doesn't mean it'd be an easy series by any stretch of the imagination, but that's the worst possible realistic matchup for the Thunder by far.
So there's a weird quirk what the Lakers are looking at here. And again, by the time this podcast or TV show, podcast post TV show airs, this could not be the case. But as of right now, the Lakers are in eighth and the Pelicans are in seventh. Pelicans are, again, having injury problems. Brandon Ingram with the bone bruise in his knee. They are under 500, or maybe, I think they're under 500 since he got hurt. Now Zion is dealing with a finger issue. The Lakers close the year in New Orleans next Sunday. The Lakers have the tiebreaker advantage on the Pelicans, and so they're not out of it in terms of catching them. The Pelicans, as luck would have it, or, you know, it's not luck, it's unluck, have to go on a West Coast trip this whole week. I think they play four games in a row on the road, and then they finish at home against the Lakers. But it's possible, Dave, that the Lakers would play the Pelicans in the last day of the season and then not have to travel. Stay there in New Orleans for several days and then be able to play right then again in a like a unexpected de facto baseball series. Now, a lot of things have to fall. Obviously, the Suns are in sixth. They've got a real hard schedule, although they keep winning. The thing about the Suns is, yes, their schedule is very hard, but one thing nobody considered is, what if they play really well during it and end up getting like incredible momentum? Well, they're 4-1 in the 10-game stretch from hell. They're 4-1. In that first stretch of that. But that is a very unusual circumstance. And when you go out on the road to New Orleans, by the way, how are you even going to pack for that trip? Because could you not have to like just immediately go on the road? I don't know. You're
I have no.
I have no return flight. A big suitcase.
Yeah, I mean, one, I generally overpack, so that won't be a problem. But I don't have a return flight. I have a flight to Memphis. I have a flight from Memphis to New Orleans, and then we float in the ether. We'll see what happens there. But I think New Orleans has played. I mean, this year the Lakers have beaten them in the season series thus far, but New Orleans over the last several years has played the Lakers pretty well. Now that was we're talking about a New Orleans team was generally healthy, but like you know when the Lakers had that final stretch in the Russell Westbrook season, the year one of Russell Westbrook, they needed to beat New Orleans twice, and New Orleans beat them twice to keep them out of the play-in scenario. And I don't know, maybe I overvalued that those performances by the Pelicans. But I still think about them not being the easiest matchup. They got a lot of skilled players. They have, obviously, guys who get in you on the ball. They have, you know, this is probably a term that is used in a negative sense, but they have tryhards. And the Lakers don't always have tryhards on their group. So, you know, talent-wise, especially with Ingram not being there, you'd pick the Lakers. But I'm not saying that's like a sure bet there. They better lock in to be able to beat the Pelicans.
I'll tell you what, McMahon, it'd be an interesting situation if the Pelicans can sort of choose their path, because the Pelicans have played really well against the Kings this year, including winning in the play-in up in Sacramento. So the Pelicans may be super incentivized. That game might be almost more important than the first play-in game next week to push the Lakers back into ninth as opposed to facing them immediately again in New Orleans, a team they've struggled with a little bit this year.
Of course, they'd rather play the Kings than the Lakers. And no disrespect to the Kings, but like LeBron and AD versus Fox and Sabonis, plus the Kings are wounded now. They're not going to have Malik Monk or Kevin Huerter. You know, I'll tell you what, nobody will have more pressure on them in the play-in situation if the Pelicans are in it than Zion Williamson. After what we saw in the in-season tournament semis, which is the biggest game of his career to this point, you know, he had to hear about that. He has played very well since then. He has responded to that humiliation, but you're going to hear about all that sort of stuff. You know, the other thing is, if it ends up being the Kings and Lakers in the last play-in game, you know, the eighth seed, who was in the group chat, Wendy? I'm not going to claim this is my stroke of genius, but somebody suggested that Dick Bavetta might be pulled out of retirement for that one.
I made a joke. I made that joke.
I was seeing if you would. I
love I Dick. Sure you, don't. I mean, I would, Bavetta. Oh,
I wasn't sure you wanted to claim that or not.
Yeah, no, I understand. But all right, Dave. Well, good luck with that packing.
Yeah, and, thanks.
We look forward to seeing you there out in the playoffs, and thanks for joining us. Kendra Andrews will be up next. Since we've broken the Lakers seal, we're breaking the Warriors seal too, even though they're still in 10th. Stay with us here on the Hoop Collective.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
All right, welcome back to the Hoop Collective. Joining us now from San Francisco, our Warriors writer, Kendra Andrews. Kendra, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. How are you guys?
How about those Warriors? They just had a 6-game winning streak, and in McMahon's domain there in Dallas. But you know, this is where they are. They're in a much better place than they were even 2-3 weeks ago. 6 out of 7, they've pretty much locked up any concern over not being into the play-in. Yeah, they have to go on the road and win 2 games to get in the playoffs, but they're one of the top 5 road teams in the NBA, and they seem like they've got a lineup that's working, and Steve Kerr is showing a lot of belief in a couple of rookies, Brandon Podziemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis, who are contributing. Draymond Green has had a couple of his best games of the season. He hasn't been ejected in about 2.5 weeks. Kendra, should we believe in the Warriors doing something, or is this just a nice story to take some of the, you know, bad stuff for press conferences away for a little while?
I do think it's a little bit of a mix, but more towards the latter. And that's because, like, you look at the overarch of the Warriors season, all of the stuff that has happened, you can kind of go into the what ifs. What if Draymond wasn't suspended for 5 games? What if he wasn't suspended for what ended up being like 16 games? What if they weren't dealing with the death of one of their assistant coaches? You could have think with that, maybe they'd be playing a little bit more as they have been the past couple of weeks. However, when I look around the rest of the Western Conference and then look back at this Warriors team, I don't see them still being that much better than a lot of the teams that are at the top of the conference. Even some maybe kind of floating around in a little bit, even in the middle a little bit, even though it's been so jumbled. But I think this is a more realistic look of the makeup of this team and what they are capable of. But and of course, you never count out Steph. You don't count out Draymond, Clay when they are at their best. However, I don't feel that they are about to put on that miraculous run that they did in 2022 to win the title after another kind of up and down year where it just magically clicked for them at this time 2 years ago.
Yeah, and you know, I did just get an up close look at them. And one of the things I asked Steve Kerr before the game is why he thought that Trayce Jackson-Davis, Draymond Green combo had worked so well. And, you know, he talked about Draymond, instead of having to anchor the defense, can freelance. He's going to have rim protection behind him, really, because they had been dominant as a defensive group with those guys in the game together. And then Trayce Jackson-Davis went out and had his worst game in a long, long time. And look, give Daniel Gafford, the Mavericks center, credit. He's wreaking havoc against a lot of big men. But it was also kind of a reminder that as phenomenal of a find as Trayce Jackson-Davis was late in the second round, it is insane for a team with any kind of serious ambition to be relying that heavily on a rookie who was picked late in the second round. I mean, again, awesome draft pick. I think the guy is going to have a really good NBA career, but for your starting center to be a rookie who 56 guys came off the board before him, it's difficult at best to envision that team making a deep run.
What I see with this team is you're in the transition period of blending these two, the veterans and the young guys, which you guys probably remember when James Wiseman was drafted to the Warriors and it was this two timelines, the magic words. This is more of an accurate representation of that. But like, and again, people who watch the Warriors and follow the Warriors are used to winning a championship. And so it's uncomfortable for them to sit in this space where it's like, no, you need an adjustment season for a late second round pick in Trayce Jackson-Davis. This is the first time we've ever really seen Jonathan Kuminga get consistent playing time and opportunities. You need a little buffer period to mend all of these different experiences and skill levels together. And it's not going to end up with a championship or maybe even a Western Conference Finals. It's going to end up being what it is now. And it's just a very different territory that for the past 10 years, no one's really seen with this team.
I mean, the question is it going to end up with a playoff series? Because the odds are stacked against them. Now, I think Sacramento slipping to 9, if that sticks, that increases the odds just because, again, Sacramento is down 2 key guys and like, obviously, the Warriors are going to have no fear of a team that they eliminated last year in the first round and won a game 7 on the Kings court. But like, I don't know, man, for a 10 seed, I understand why they get so much attention, but we need to keep in perspective just how difficult a path it is just for them to even get to the playoffs.
Yeah, look, my thing on the Warriors is this. They don't have anything really to prove. Obviously, everybody who has a title wants another one.
Sure.
So, and they're heavily invested. The reason that this season has extra emphasis on it is because of the uncertainty of what happens after it, specifically with Clay.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are wondering, is this the last we're going to see of them? And I think the answer is going to be no. Like the way they've played in the second half of the season, there is reason to believe that this core is going to stay mostly together. Are there going to be changes? Is there going to be payroll cutting? Yeah, I think absolutely. Yeah. But it's not like, they're trying. You know, because their standard has been so high and because they've reached six finals as a group together, it's like, well, if you don't make the finals, you fail.
Right.
Well, maybe as you just detailed, maybe this is actually a step forward, positive growth season. Mm-hmm. It may not feel that way because of the expectations. It may not feel that way because we saw the Draymond suspensions and we've seen the difficulty with Clay and everything like that. But really, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is whether Steph believes that this is still a place to stay invested in. And I don't see why that would change, Kendra. And
yeah,
even if they're eliminated, even if they lose on April 16th or 17th, whatever that first play-in day is, I don't I don't necessarily think that it means that it's all over. It's not a binary keep the, you know, nothing stops, you know, meme from Wolf of Wall Street or, you know, tear down city. I think it's probably somewhere in between. And I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but when I was around a week ago, I didn't get terrible vibes there.
No,
I got vibes of a team that was still having fun.
Absolutely. The vibes have been generally really good this season. And it is a group, when you spend time around them, you can tell they do enjoy each other. They like being around each other. They like playing together. And the other thing of why I agree with you, Brian, that you're not going to, this isn't the beginning of the end. This isn't going to be the last time you see these guys together, or is what else it, like, it's not like, again, I just listed out Jonathan Kuminga, Trey Stockton Davis. It's not like those guys are ready to take over. If you get rid of Steph, if you get rid of Clay or Draymond, again, Jonathan is taking massive strides. He's become a really important part of this team. He is not ready to be the guy. And when then you look, oh, who could they get to trade Clay or all those things? Okay, again, who are you getting that is actually going to make that big of an impact to get them back to the top of the mountain? It's not there. So you stick with this group. These guys are devoted to each other, and you keep bringing everyone along. And yes, you're probably eventually going to get to that crossroads where those decisions have to be made. You mentioned, you're going to have to make some pay cuts over the summer. That has to happen, but you're not going to see it from the main guys. It's going to be from the role players. Some of the younger guys, probably.
Well,
honestly.
Clay right now is kind of a role player. So
yeah.
Well, he's going to have to take a pay cut.
Yeah. That's right.
It's just, I mean, those negotiations aren't going to be comfortable, but it's hard to see Klay Thompson ending up anywhere else. And then obviously you look at how do you cut salary? Well, CP3's non-guaranteed year, I think, is going to be a pretty simple way to start there.
If you say goodbye to CP, or even if you resign him, he comes way down, and you can, Klay takes a pay cut that doesn't, they're not going to offer him the mid-level. They're going to pay him a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Just with those two moves right there, you completely reformat your reality. Mm-hmm. And even if you extend Kuminga, his new contract wouldn't come on until the following year. He's still got 1 year left on his rookie deal. Like, you don't have to be a financial wizard to figure this out. We are not where we were in 2017-18. Okay. Those Warriors days are past, but I just had so many people in the media and around me at ESPN ready to bring the dirt and dump it on the team. And you may say, well, they're never going to win another title again. Yeah, I guess so. They are not as good as the Denver Nuggets. They are not as good as the Boston Celtics. I agree with that. It does not mean that they're not continuing to fight and they're continuing to stay together. I think they love staying together and trying to fight through it, even when the dark times come and they have to get up there and answer for Draymond's behavior, or they have to put their arm around Clay or whatever. I think that's something that really is something that keeps them together. And Steve Kerr signed the extension. Like, mm-hmm. I know it was for a lot of money. He didn't need that money. If he was done with it, he would have just said goodbye. He doesn't want to walk away from working with Steph every single day. I mean, Bob Myers just was talking about this on the podcast with JJ Redick, where he said the loss that he had was that he didn't get to be around these guys every day. He didn't have Steph Curry as a part of his professional, personal life, you know, 30 days out of the month or 26 days out of the month. And I thought that was important. Steve Kerr said, I'm sticking with this. And I think they're going to stick with it.
Yeah. And from my understanding, at least when it comes to Clay's contract and the conversations that I've had, is he isn't under this impression that he is going to get this massive contract. Mm-hmm. Steve is on for 2 more years, matching up with Steph's contract of 2 more years. Clay would be content matching up with those guys. Let's finish this out. He understands where he is at in his career, what he is capable of, what he deserves. But the other important thing is he wants to feel appreciated by this organization. He wants them to come to him and say, we're going to take care of you. That's what they did with Draymond when they were negotiating his contract. Listen, we haven't figured it out yet, but we are going to, you are taken care of. That hasn't fully, at least from the last time I have checked, hasn't been fully expressed to Clay. But once that is presented and communicated of, we want you here, we are going to take care of you, it's going to look a little bit different than it has your first you know, however many years with this organization, but you are that important to us that you always have a home here. Once he gets that from the higher ups, this isn't from Steve, this isn't from Steph or Draymond, he knows it from them. When it's from other people around the organization who are making a lot of these financial decisions, it's more than like, that's what he needs to feel. He needs to feel desired and wanted. Clay is a guy who we all know, just he wants to win. He wants to be competitive. This is it. This is the best chance to do that, right? His role has looked different this year. He understands that he is now a role player, Wendy, as you were saying, and it's a different reality, but he also wants to stick it out with the same guys he rode in with.
Yeah, McMahon, so he's on a max contract. When Draymond took a pay cut, he went from like 27 or 28 to like 22. He took a pay cut. It wasn't enormous, but Clay is going to have to come down from the mid 40s.
Sure.
But he's coming down from a max. You know, that's not, it isn't quite where Draymond is, but what's he going to,
Look,
he's from the West Coast. Was he going to chase some title? Well, I mean,
but more than anything else, there is something extremely special about being a one franchise Hall of Famer. Like in the modern NBA, there's not very many of those guys. And like, you know, Dirk, for example, he will always be absolutely revered in Dallas. And he would have been even if he'd have gone ring chasing late in his career. But the fact that he is Dallas's and only Dallas's as far as the NBA goes, that is special. And these are statue guys. There will be statues outside of the Chase Center of these guys, just like there's a statue in the plaza outside this arena for Dirk. And, you know, Dirk late in his career talked about how it would have been tough for him not to be tempted to chase a ring if he didn't have one. But the fact that he got one in 2011, like he could roll with the punches in the twilight of his career. And, you know, obviously the Mavericks weren't very good. And, you know, the Warriors are in much better shape than that. But like for Clay, for Draymond, they don't have one. These guys have, you know, as Clay would tell you, four of them things. Four of them things. And so, like, to envision him in any other uniform, it would be awkward. And there's not a problem, especially if a franchise has had their recent history, a dynasty, one of the great runs in NBA history. There's no shame in that kind of transitioning to them being pretty good. And they are pretty good right now. They're a pretty good team. The problem is if you're a pretty good team that is historically pricey,
right,
then the price tag has to come down. And that's fine. They can figure that out this summer.
All right. Welcome back to the Hoop Collective. Kendra, what do you think is, if you're going to construct a pathway for the Warriors to make some sort of run, I guess that would mean even getting into the playoffs and then having some sort of competitive first round series. What would it look like if you're a Warriors fan? What are you hoping to see in the next few days to fall into place?
I think you want to face the Kings in that 9-10. I know you guys were talking about that with Dave a couple of minutes ago, and I think to start out this, but yeah, like they'd want to face Sacramento in Sacramento. That's fine for that 9-10. If they win that between, I guess it's Pelicans and Lakers right now, you got to take Pelicans, I'd say, and you hope that Denver falls to the 2 seed and probably that Oklahoma City is in that 1 seed, I'd say. And you just try and
so much disrespect for the Thunder.
I was gonna say, I've got to go to Oklahoma City next week. You guys are killing me.
I know, again, I heard you guys talking about it with Dave, and it's literally the same reasons that you list for why the Lakers would rather play OKC than Minnesota. It's like the same reasons. They're smaller, right? The Warriors, yes, like we've been talking about Trace a lot. They're a little, no, they still want to face a smaller team. You don't want to be facing the Twin Towers over in Minnesota. And the inexperience, again, I don't know how many games total the Warriors have playoff combined, but I can't count that high. Like it is so much.
I gave that LeBron stat where he's got, almost three times as much experience as the whole Thunder roster, where there's at least a few Warriors that we can say all have more playoff experience than the entire Thunder roster.
Exactly. It's that, I think that is their best path. And well, yeah, to show respect to the Thunder, it won't be an easy series. I don't know if I would take the Warriors.
I would not.
Right. But I would feel more uncomfortable if I'm a Warriors fan going to Minnesota and facing those guys. And you look at the season series between those two teams, and it has kind of gone either way. The Warriors have got some on them. They've got some on the Warriors, but there's just something about the inexperience of Oklahoma that when you're facing this experience of a team, just you feel better about it.
Yeah. I will say this, talking to folks in Oklahoma City, they're realistic about it. I mean,
right.
They believe in themselves, but they're like, yeah, we gotta prove ourselves. We're still learning about our team. We're still, you know, we may get to the playoffs and, you know, get punched in the face and right. understand we have to change. We think we got a really good team. We think we can, you know, that we've got a lot going for us and that we've won a lot of games playing how we're playing. And we think we got a chance to make a long run, but like, I don't think it's,
you never know.
I don't think it's, I think even they admit, you know, maybe they'd not say that publicly.
They're finishing their breakfast. The playoffs are just a donut. They're finishing their breakfast.
It's something.
Right. I mean, the fact that we're
more than breakfast, but something
the fact
less
that we're even talking about them finishing in the one seed overall, I think is like a tip the cap moment, yeah. like to them. And yes, the playoffs are different, and I get
well,
it. But
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander missing like 5 or 6 games here with this mm-hmm. quad injury. They've taken some losses. They're in third as we do this pod. They've really kind of let the one seed slip a little bit yep. from their grasp, which I think if you're a Warriors fan, you're kind of like, man. But yeah. if you're the Lakers and you see yourself getting into the, you can smell 7, now you might be onto something.
Listen, so. You know what's destined to happen here? Thunder Suns, KD coming back to Bricktown, baby.
It would be terrific, and I would love to see that series play out. There's a couple of series I'd love to see play out, but I would love to see Durant back in Oklahoma City. And I think he'd be great. I think that'd be a great series too, but those are two teams that prefer to play small. So maybe that's a team that the Thunder wouldn't mind.
The Thunder have been whooping up on the Suns, including beating them badly without SGA recently.
That's the only one of the losses. That's the only to this point, at least, that they've had. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Kendra. Thank you so much for taking some time to join us. Thank you to David McMiniman. Thank you to Jackson and Andrea, our producers. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you for watching, listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. We will be talking to you soon.
Adios, amigos.